We are live in the Quicken Loan Studios in Southern California. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Nice to have you here. I'm Jim Rome. Open segment right here, then we go back to back. Next segment, Golden State Warriors GM Bob Myers. After that, Calgary Flames head coach Bill Peters. Then the third hour is wide open. So if you know what you want to hit, hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter if you don't mind, at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, breaking news. Ian Rappaport at Rap Sheet tweets, Raiders GM Reggie McKenzie had a meeting with his scouts today where he informed them that he was fired, per me and at Tom Palacero. He was given the chance to stay the season, but is not expected to do so. No surprise at all. No surprise at all. The only surprise is that it did not happen sooner. I mean, from the second the ink was dry on John Gruden's contract, we knew this was the way this was going to go. And it didn't take long. Gruden gets in there, reportedly starts building out his own scouting staff. He was dumping on McKenzie's picks, running him under the bus. So this is not surprising. Fact of the matter is, McKenzie actually did a nice job. McKenzie did a good job of getting that team to where it was. I mean, he took over a situation that was not good at all, and then he got them to the postseason. He took over a team with no picks that had a bad cap situation and turned them into a playoff team. So, although it's not surprising to see this go down the way it went down, give these guys credit. Put a little respect on him. Except Gruden got in there with that contract, with the guaranteed money, and started to build out his own staff. And when he started to take public runs at McKenzie, you knew that was not going to last long.
You have to ask Reggie.
You'd have to ask Reggie. Hey, look, I'm not saying that a guy like that shouldn't come in there and make his own decisions, do his own thing. But to run a guy like that under the bus publicly, you'd have to ask Reggie.
You have to ask Reggie.
So the question is, why would that guy want to stay? If they came in and they told him, we're going to make a change at the end of the season, but you're welcome to stay, who the hell would stay? Oh, that's great. Thanks. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think I will stay. Or that, or you can stroke me a check and I'll be leaving right now. So that's breaking news and not at all surprising. And even when the Raiders win, they lose. They beat Pittsburgh, but they're in it to win it. Not the game, but the first pick overall. So more on that in a minute. What a terrible loss for the Steelers. This email says, Steelers lose, Ravens lose, Bengals lose, Patriots lose, Browns win, America wins. George in Seabus. Nicely done, George. Cleveland 26, Carolina 20. And I could do an entire take on the Panthers dropping five in a row and punching their ticket to the outside looking in by going over a month without a dub. I mean, look at the way they fell apart. But you know me, I'm a glass half full guy, so instead I think I'll focus on the Browns. But before I do that, let me make sure the C-Town has got some scratch paper and a pen. Because yesterday's comeback win over Carolina just landed the Browns on the best December television graphic that they could ever hope for. You all know exactly what I'm talking about. That beautiful piece of digital real estate, digital artwork that lays out all the conference squads in the playoff picture. You know how that looks. On the left, the division leaders. In the middle, the two current wildcard spot holders. And then on the right, that long list of teams that are, say it with me right now, in the hunt. And if you're Cleveland, the three best words in December football are in the hunt. Today, I would like to officially welcome the Cleveland Browns to the hunt.
Fun times in Cleveland again.
Still Cleveland.
Let me remind you all a few things just to maximize your appreciation of this situation. First things first, this is the Cleveland Browns that we're talking about, a team that had one win over their previous 2 years, a team that fired their head coach in the middle of this season, a team that's already on its 29th quarterback since drafting Tim Couch back in 99. That team is officially in the hunt. December 10th, and their playoff hopes are still flickering. like a tea candle in a windstorm. They're still alive. They're in the hunt. And where there is a will, there is a way, a mathematical way. Now, get out that piece of paper. Scratch this out. Because the Browns don't just need to run the table to get to 8-7-1. They're going to need a grip of help from a grip of teams. As an example, the catbird seat Ravens need to lose 2 out of 3. The last second miracle Dolphins need to lose 2 out of 3. The not dead can't quit Titans need to lose 2 out of 3. The Andrew Luck-led Colts need to lose 2 out of 3. And Cleveland's next opponent, the Broncos, they need to lose 2.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
That's what I'm saying. There is a chance. Hell yes, C-Town. There is a chance. You don't get put on that coveted in the hunt graphic if there is not a chance. And the Browns are on that graphic. Now, I will say this. There's scoreboard watching, and then there's scoreboard Rubik's cubing. The Browns are scoreboard Rubik's cubing the rest of the way. And that's if they continue to win. But let's not let the math get in the way of a great story, because no matter what happens between now and the end of the season, there are some things that you cannot take away from this team. You know, like the fact that Greg with 3 G's, 3 G's Williams, is now Greg with 3 W's Williams. And that's in 5 games as head coach. He's already matched the same win total that Hugh Jackson needed 2+ years to get to. And if this dude quits right now, he will have a better winning percentage as a Browns head coach than Bill Belichick. 3 W's, Williams. Pretty good line on the resume. Not that he needs it, considering he's already got a stack of offers from teams that don't even need to bother to interview him before offering him their job. Allegedly. Hey, listen, all joking aside, I'm not saying this guy's going to get that gig full-time, but I'm saying, how do you not at least consider him full-time? They've got a winning record since he took over, which is amazing. Almost as amazing as the fact that we're even talking about this guy is a viable head coaching candidate in the NFL. Not long after it looked like he may never work another day again in the NFL. So say what you want about 3G Greg, and you'd probably be right even if you did say it, but this guy's doing a hell of a job right now. He's doing a hell of a job. They're 3-2 with him as head coach. And then you've got Baker Mayfield, who became the first, check that, the third QB since 96 to spin a TD in each of his first 10 starts. But more impressive than that is getting your clock cleaned by Texas and then bouncing right back against the Panthers, which is what he did, and he looked great doing it. I've said it before, this team does not need to make the playoffs to prove or justify anything at all to me. They don't need to make the playoffs to justify firing Hugh Jackson in the middle of the year. That was the right move. They don't need to make the playoffs to justify taking Baker Mayfield first overall. That was also the right move. They don't need to make the playoffs this season, and they probably won't, which is fine. Because they are going to make the playoffs, and it's going to be sooner than later. Because the Cleveland Browns are still America's team, damn it. And at least for the moment, they're still in the hunt. And if you ask me, C-Town, that's a pretty good place to be. Man, that is a bitchin' place to be. Still in the hunt. All things considered, that is an awesome spot to be. The Cleveland Browns. America's team. Cleveland, Ohio. America's city.
Cleveland.
Nice win. I don't care if the Panthers are reeling. Nice win. Nice bounce back for Baker Mayfield. And 3G Greg Williams? Is there really a conversation as to whether or not that guy should get that job full time? I think there is. I don't think he'll get it, but I think there's a conversation there. They're playing hard for this guy. They're winning for this guy.
Affect the head.
Affect the head. Affect the scoreboard. Affect the bottom line. At Fake K Winslow tweets, the Browns are in the hunt? So am I. So be careful or I might accidentally shoot you. Signed, Bob Knight. fake Kellen Winslow, even for you. Bob Knight, he once shot a guy accidentally hunting. That'll happen. Especially if you hunt with Bob Knight, I guess. Stucknuts in. We were in the hunt too. Signed Jared, Brett, and Potsy. Hashtag Dilla.
Brett Favre goes back to pass. He pumps.
Hey, y'all, watch this.
Now he fires. Can't believe what I'm seeing right now.
We got two more. Yeah. Let's go.
Come on, Jared.
Come on, Jared. That is way too much for me to unravel right now. If you know that, you know that. And if you don't, sorry, I can't help you. Rome, all Cleveland needs. Come on, Jared. All Cleveland needs is a chance. That's our motto. Sign losers who play scratcher tickets. Signed Stephen PHX. Wore Gronk, looking like one of the teachers at the student-teacher basketball game during that last play. Except he was not laughing about that. Yo soy fiesta.
It sucked.
Should not have been on the field. And if you're going to put that guy on the field, why did you have him change out of his cleats and put on roller skates? Should not have been on the field. The only reason a guy like that is on the field is if there's going to be a Hail Mary. There was not going to be a Hail Mary. Everybody knew that they were going to try a lateral play. Why did we know that, or how do we know that? Because Ryan Tannehill was not going to throw it 70 yards in the air. How is it that the only guy who didn't know that is the smartest guy ever? Rome, you thought that I was going to make that tackle. They had to get 69 yards to score. I have a reputation to consider. Sign Gronk. Tim and Seabus, War America's team, getting the W yesterday against the Panthers. America's team gets over. The Cleveland Browns, America's team. Cleveland, Ohio, America's city. This email reads, hi, Jim. Between Gronkowski and Gostkowski, I'm going to start snowboarding from now on. Because skis stink. Sarah T. in Providence. Yeah, not a good day for the kicker, nor a good day for the tight end, but at least the kicker was on the field when he should have been. The tight end was not.
I was like, Gronk's on the field. We got this, you know?
It's really not his fault. If you're going to put a tight end back to be your last line of defense, what do you think is going to happen when you've got a skilled guy in the open field? And you're asking a tight end to make a tackle, and he's your last line of defense. What do you think's going to happen? That. Exactly that. You're going to take a Pro Bowl safety off of the field and put a tight end on the field. Why? To show you you're the smartest guy ever? You already are. Hood, we know that. You might be the smartest guy ever, but that was pretty much the dumbest thing ever. When we come back, Golden State Warriors GM Bob Myers joins us. Though it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. You may think it makes you look casual, but more than likely, it just ends up looking sloppy. This is why Untuck It makes shirts that are specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long and not too short. It's just right. Shirts designed so well that GQ calls them, quote, perfection. Untuck It shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. Not only do they look good, they feel amazing. Impeccable craftsmanship and attention to detail make Untuck It the only choice for the untucked man. With more than 50 sizing options, every guy can find the perfect shirt. So log on to untuckit.com. Check out all the new fall arrivals. Use the promo code ROME20 for 20% off your entire first-time purchase. You can also visit Untuck It at one of their over 35 retail locations across the country. Stop hiding your shirt with your pants with your shirt, untuckit.com. Your solution to perfecting casual. Use the promo code ROME20 for 20% savings, untuckit.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You know, this is one of my favorite conversations of the year, so let's get right to it. If you're on hold, stay there. Right now, we are joined by the owner of one of the finest resumes in sports, except it all boils down to one thing. San Quentin Hoops legend. I am joined by Bob Myers. Bob, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. Bob, I have to start with this. I understand from a very good source that you were not able to participate in the annual San Quentin Hoops game this year. How is your hip these days?
Jim, I'm glad we're leading off with the important stuff. The hip is not ready yet. I'm doing some spot shooting. You know, have you seen those guns that they have at the where they kick the ball back out to you?
Yes.
So I shot 100 shots, and I made 38, which, you know, we don't have to take a genius. That's 38%, which is pretty much, you know, the percentage I live at. So my shot is still there, but my conditioning and my ability to move is not there. So if I did go to San Quentin, it's not the place you want to start your comeback. It's not a good place for that. So I couldn't make it this year. We lost. I still have to go back and avenge that. The crazy thing is, in a life way, not in a basketball way, there's a San Quentin community, so I'm running into more and more people that are actually getting out, which I just never thought I'd have a network of people that were in San Quentin. You know, like I said, I grew up in a non-San Quentin-like place, so it's a part of my life that's fascinating to me, even. It's just, like I said, when I get back out there, you're coming with me.
No, I know, and I appreciate that very much, Bob. I know it's tough for you to miss that game, but you got to take care of you first, and I know you will, and then you'll be back, and I got to get out there. I know it. At some point, I got to get out there. Bob Myers joining us. Now, Bob, something really interesting happened. Sports Illustrated named the Warriors the Sports Person of the Year this morning. It is the 65th Sports Person of the Year award, but only the fourth time that a team has been named the winner. What does the honor mean to you?
Man, you know, that's something you grow up as a kid, seeing who won the sports, you know, Sports Illustrated Person of the Year, and it's a pretty decorated list. But to get it from a team standpoint, it's fitting, really, is what it is, because the more you're around, whether it's our team, I think, or any business or sports, it's never one person that does it. And I know that we live kind of in a society where we want to anoint, you know, the star of the movie was the whole movie. Well, there's a lot of people that make a movie, and there's a lot of people that make a team. So to see our entire team get to celebrate it together and get recognized together, and not just the players but the coaches, ownership, everybody that's involved in making the Warriors what they are, it's a cool thing. And that's kind of what we try to embody here, is that it's not one person. It's a collection of people. But it's going to be fun. It's hard to put into words. I actually haven't. Chris Ballard's an amazing writer. He wrote the piece on it. I was trying to. It's a long story, so I haven't even finished reading it myself.
Bob Myers joining us. He's an excellent, excellent writer. Let me read you a quote from this. Ballard writes, quote, "For sustained excellence, business innovation, and cultural impact, for injecting joy into the game and setting fire to conventional wisdom, for winning with a center built like a forward, a point guard built like a featherweight, and an offense predicated on the idea that the stars want nothing more than to pass the ball to someone who will pass the ball to someone else who might shoot it from 27 feet, for thinking the game and speaking out," end quote. I mean, I could go on, but I'll stop right there. Of all the things I just mentioned, is there any one aspect that makes you more proud than the others?
You know what? I mean, I think it says it in there, Jim, but actually, and you're gonna follow this up with a question, I know, but it's actually getting along, to be honest. In this day and age, with the scrutiny, with the attention that's put upon players, they're almost brands in themselves, a lot of these players, and they deserve that. I mean, that's something that's evolved for them, and it's a powerful thing. So in a team-like environment where it takes more than one person to actually succeed and enjoy the success of a teammate. My favorite, by far, moments when I watch our team is when they celebrate for each other, when you'll watch the players on the bench get excited for their teammates. That's by far the most joy I get when I watch us, is to see their reaction to someone else's success. And I think that is the challenge. That is the fragility of any team, any organization, to recognize, and John, like I've used this quote many times, but John Wooden, and I went to UCLA, had a great quote. It's amazing what you can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit. It's such a simple thing to say, but it's so hard to do. We're so caught up in, well, you know, this guy is the reason they won the game, and to kind of push all that aside and say we are winning together and we are losing together, the challenge of keeping that mindset, and Steve Kerr does a fantastic job of it, as do our players, that's the real hard part. It may look easy, but to keep it all strung together is the fascinating and I think most challenging part of all of it.
Bob Myers joining us. You know, Bob, when you say that, I think Steph Curry put it another way. One of the things that he said was the goal is to overcome human nature, which is obviously a profound challenge. And I think that's what you're talking about, at least in part. So then you see that moment earlier this season where Kevin Durant and Draymond Green got into it. What did you think when you saw that? I mean, was that human nature popping up?
Yeah, you know, it is. And that's probably a fair way of saying it. It's that you live in close quarters. And you have different personalities, you have different emotions, you have different ways of going about things. So when you see something like that, to me, I see, and it, honestly, they're probably, as far as how people get along, they're two of the closest people on the team. They really genuinely are. They come from similar backgrounds, you know, not the easiest places. They made it through a lot. They had to get through a gauntlet to get to the NBA. And so they share that experience. So they're just made up differently. This is a guy that wears everything in Draymond, just unbridled emotion, good and bad. He unchecked, and that's how he's lived his whole life. And a week or so after, Draymond and I talked to him, and I think for people to really understand him, they need to understand for him, he hates to lose so much. And Jim, you've covered sports all the time, and you've interviewed hundreds of thousands of people. There's a few people that literally can't stand losing so much that it makes them sometimes difficult. That you can list a long list of guys. And the thing that they all have in common is they usually win. They're usually winners. Now, sometimes those people are hard because they're the people that when they lose the Monopoly game, you know, it's on Friday night, they flip it over and throw it.
Right.
And you go, come on, man, it's just Monopoly. But they can't. That's how Draymond's made up, and that's how he's had to be his whole life. He's not a 7-foot, you know, power forward. He's been undersized. He's been scrappy and clawing. And then you've got Kevin, who's got all this natural ability and is as competitive as Draymond, but doesn't showcase it in the same way. So you've got two people that want the same thing. They just go about it differently. So yeah, it's all part of the human nature of any relationship. And I always tell people, as much as people might want to say differently, there's a healthiness in saying whatever you have to say in any relationship and getting it out and then moving on, because I more worry about when people don't talk and don't say anything, because inevitably on a team, in a friendship, in a family, in any relationship, there's times where it's hard. So get that out and move past it. And I honestly think we're beyond it now, and I think it'll be something that does make us stronger. I really believe that.
Bob Myers is joining us for a few more moments. Bob, I want to get you to go back to Steph Curry for a minute, because Steve Kerr said that SI should just give the award to Steph Curry and call him, and called him a short Tim Duncan. That was a quote. You know, when you look at Steph Curry, if you were to build a basketball player from scratch who would completely alter the way the game of basketball is played, Steph might not be the guy you'd come up with physically. So how do you explain how he has completely changed how the entire NBA plays basketball?
Well, you know what? He has to do what he's done, Jim, and to, you know, you compare him to people that have kind of shifted or evolved their sport. You have to be bold, you have to be brash, you have to be willing to kind of challenge the norm. And with his shot, simply his shot, he's changed it. His ability to shoot and take shots and make the three-pointer, what used to be a mid-range shot, is now a three-point shot. He's a huge reason for that. And what that's done is, and you look now at the game, the space to operate has become so much bigger, because if you play basketball, you realize you didn't really usually have to guard your guy 30 feet from the basket. You really didn't have to do that. But all of a sudden, you're playing against this guy who shoots that shot like it's a jump shot at the free throw line and makes it. And then all of a sudden, you say, well, hang on a sec. Do I have to guard this guy out here? And it's worth 1.5 times, three-pointers worth 1.5 times as a two. So I really got to get out there. And if you play basketball or you watch or you've been around it, it's not comfortable being that far away from what you're trying to protect in a very simple way, is the basket. That's what they teach you in your second grade. Protect the basket. Stay between your man and the basket. All of a sudden, you're 35 feet from the basket, and you got a guy that's shooting a shot and making it. And that's uncomfortable. And to see him go through that evolution in the way that he did, and was almost, there was a subtlety to it, where all of a sudden, and for me it was a moment 3-4 years ago where I looked at the box score, and I think he'd taken 12 three-pointers or something like that. And nobody in the media, nobody on our team, nobody thought that was a big deal at all. And then you knew, for me, immediately I thought, you know what, he's arrived. Like this game, him, the NBA, is changing. It has changed now where you look back at the 90s, the 80s, and 80s, nobody was taking 12. Teams were taking 12 three-pointers a game, not one person. So for him to all of a sudden be there, and you know you've arrived when nobody's talking about it anymore. So it was almost like what he was able to do in a very Steph-like, subtle way. All of a sudden you woke up one day and you go, teams are shooting. This guy, Steph shot 15 threes in the game last night, or he made 9, no big deal. Or a team is shooting 40. Did he do it all by himself? No. There's a lot of coaches that were involved in that process, but hats off to him. I mean, you wouldn't want a better ambassador to carry that torch of kind of being in the history of the game. When they look back on him, he'll get great credit for this three-point evolution, and he deserves to.
Bob Myers, my guest. Bob, one more thing, and I could talk to you for an hour, but, you know, you're always going to avoid taking credit. Steve Kerr is always going to avoid credit. Rick Welts is always going to avoid taking credit. But there was a moment back in 2016 after that Game 7 loss to the Cavs when you and Kerr met up right after the game. Generally, how does a conversation between a GM and a coach go in a situation like that? And then how did it actually go between you and Steve?
Well, when you lose, I hope anybody that's in professional sports or strives to be losing a Game 7, oh, man, you talk about, like, a rawness to that. Luckily, we'd won. I can't imagine going through, like, what the Buffalo Bills, you know, losing in a Super Bowl. And at least we had a championship when we lost that one. But first, in these moments, Jim, in the hardest moments of your life or mine, we usually show the worst of ourselves. I'm not talking hard like tragedy. I'm talking like a professional thing that happens to you that is really tough, unfair, you know, it hurts. Usually you lash out at other people around you because it feels better. Just feels better. And then you apologize, I shouldn't have done that. So it takes a lot of restraint in that moment to just accept losing, right? There's a way to go through winning graciously, and we don't teach enough people how do you lose? How do you fail? Like, what do you do when you failed, I've failed. To get to where you are in your career, you failed, right? So what? But how did you handle that failure? So losing the Game 7, you immediately feel like I failed and I'm mad. I'm pissed. So who do I blame? Who do I get mad at? So I will tell you, and this isn't to be critical of coach-GM relationships, it's easier. There's a couple things that this usually would go. You don't even want to talk to your coach because it's easier to blame him for whatever. He probably doesn't want to talk to you. Maybe he's blaming you. The coach is blaming the GM for something. So most of the time, you don't even, after a game like that, you're probably going in the other direction because you know I'm going to say something I shouldn't say. So what happened was you check yourself first because, yeah, you have to acknowledge this sucks, right? That's the first part of it. This sucks. So then I went back in the locker room. But here's what you have to get over. It sucks for everybody. It doesn't just suck for me. It sucks for our players. It sucks for our fans. It sucks for our owners, our coaches. So I went in the locker room, and before I just sat there, right? Sometimes there are no words. Sometimes you just sit down next to somebody that is in the same kind of pain you are, and you just sit there. There's nothing to say. You just lost Game 7. Like, what are words going to do? And Steve says, you know, there's some things before I could say anything, he said, I should have done a couple things differently. And I said, first of all, for him to self, you know, be that self-aware, and by the way, so does every – even when you win, you could have done different – coaches make hundreds of decisions. They're not going to all be perfect in any game. And I said, yeah, but I said, I didn't – you know, I could have given you a roster that made it a little easier for you. And those were heartfelt things. I felt that. I was kind of putting it back on me. He was kind of putting it back on him. And the beauty in that is, as a leader in any organization, this is what you lead for. This is why you're paid to lead. This is why you have the role you have, is to take on that. And then when you win, it's also to defer and deflect and say, because of this player, that player. But when you lose, that's when you got to own it as a leader. And so that's where Steve is so good, in that before I can even, not that I would have, he just takes it on himself. Mm-hmm. And when you have that in a coach-GM relationship, it can really flip. It can, because then the relationship can last, Jim, because these things are hard to sustain. But when you have that type of dynamic and that type of human being like Steve, it allows the friendship, the relationship to, one, be fun, and two, to last a long time. So that's the uniqueness of a guy like Steve and our team. And I know we got to go, but the next morning I meet with all the players after we lost Game 7, 12 hours later, and I kept waiting for Steph to blame somebody or Clay to blame Draymond for being suspended or Draymond to blame one of those guys for not shooting well enough or somebody to blame somebody. And I tell you, nobody did. And it was just them and I in a room. It would have been the perfect time to blame someone else. And I knew then, and I've told this story, I knew that in that moment that we were going to do some good things because I saw how we handled adversity.
Bob Myers, GM and president of basketball ops for the Golden State Warriors. Sports Illustrated has named the Warriors the sports person of the year this morning. Bob, we never have enough time. I can't say that I've ever appreciated you more than I do right now. What a great conversation that was. I'm sorry that you didn't make the trip to San Quentin. However, I know you will bounce back. You always do. I know I owe you that trip as well. What can I say, Bob? You are such a good friend of the program. I really appreciate you. Congrats on the award.
Anytime you want tickets, too.
You got it.
Sit with me, though. I want to hear your basketball thoughts.
Yeah, I probably won't be doing that. Better that I don't expose myself, right? Bob Myers, I'll take you up on it. You know I will. Bob Myers, Bob, thanks so much. Really good to have you back.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, how would you like to be me and sit at a game with Bob Myers, quote, so he can hear my basketball knowledge? I think I'd rather run in the game in San Quentin. I'd rather play point guard. It's an amazing conversation. My thanks to Bob Myers. And again, if we're talking Golden State basketball and Bob Myers is coming on, I want to be sure that I thank the amazing PR staff of Golden State. Brett Winkler, Michael Ravina, Cole Lawrence, Daryl Arata, and of course the icon, the legend, the GOAT, the best there has ever been in any sport, Raymond Ritter.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. My thanks to Bob Myers and Golden State. And right now we're talking hockey. I'm not waiting until the postseason to talk NHL. You know we have affiliates in Canada. We are joined right now by the head coach of the Calgary Flames. First season with the Flames. He spent his previous four seasons as Hurricanes head coach. He was the head coach for Canada at the 2018 IIHF World Championship in May. Led Canada to a gold medal at the 2016 IIHF World Championship. Calgary is in first in the Pacific Division, and they are hosting Philadelphia Wednesday night. Bill Peters is my guest. Bill, it's really nice to have you on. How are you?
Very good, Jim, and yourself?
Good. In fact, I'm great. Bill, nice to visit with you. Let me ask you, you're more than a quarter of the way through the season. You're in first place in the Pacific. I know you dropped a tough one to Edmonton yesterday, but overall, what do you make of the start that your team's gotten off to?
Well, we're happy with where we're at, and we're happy the way we're trending. We're getting better all the time. We're getting better every time the calendar clicks off into a new month. So that's what's encouraging for me. You know, you hear coaches talk about the process all the time, and we're getting better. Our specialty teams are getting better. Both our goaltenders are playing well right now, and our young guys are improving. And I give a lot of credit to our veteran guys who have led the way and have been great examples for our young guys.
Calgary head coach Bill Peters, my guest. Now, when you were introduced as the Flames' new head coach, one of the things you talked about was the fact that when you're coaching or you're playing for a Canadian team, there's just a different feel. There's a different buzz. How would you describe that buzz, and then how much does that mean to you?
Well, it means a lot, actually. We're fortunate. You know, there's seven teams in Canada and a passionate country for the sport of ice hockey, obviously, and you know, Calgary and Alberta in general, it's hockey country. You know, we're playing on a hockey night in Canada lots, Sportsnet, Rogers Hockey, and it's exciting. And the fans hold you accountable. They know when you're playing well and working hard, they're into the game. The atmosphere in the building's electric, and I think it helps. I think it gives the players extra juice.
Yeah, that's how you want it. That's exactly what you want. Now, you also talked about how you felt that this roster was one that was built to win in the modern game. How would you describe the modern game, and then what kind of players are you looking for? What do you need?
Well, you got to be able to skate. You look around the league, all the teams are having success. They play a very up-tempo game. Their D are able to transport the puck, and they are able to go back and get it and move it. You know, the trend in our game has been to smaller puck-moving D, You don't have to be 5'10 to move the puck. You can still be a bigger man, but you have to be able to have vision and skill on the back end to get the puck up to your forwards and get the game going. And then our D is very active in the rush part of the offensive attack, and I think that's the way you have to play.
Flames head coach Bill Peters joining us. Now, you played for Mike Babcock at Red Deer College, and then you were with him in Spokane, and then three seasons as an assistant in Detroit. I had him on the show last week. I've got so much respect for him. What was it like to work with him, and what was your biggest takeaway from that time with him?
Well, you know, I had a lot of fun playing for him in Red Deer College, working with him along the way in junior hockey and then in the National Hockey League. Just a good man, good family man, obviously a real good coach, but you learn a lot from him, both on and off the ice. He just treats people the right way. He's very direct, very organized, hard-working, driven guy. He leads by example, and he's had success at every level, and it's no surprise to me.
You know, Bill, when you talk about him being direct, guys who play for you talk about the fact that you're honest, even if it's something that they do not want to hear. You're going to be forthright. You're going to give it to them straight. It sounds pretty simple, and it sounds pretty basic, but how important is it to have that kind of relationship with your players?
Well, I think it's real important. You know what? It's just, and it goes both ways. If they're not happy with something, come and see me. Communicate with me. Communication's huge. But be careful, too, to a certain degree, if you got thin skin, because you're going to hear the truth, and it's going to be very, very factual. But obviously, we're trying to make players, too. As coaches, we're trying to make players. We're trying to set them up into situations to succeed so they're successful individually to allow us to be successful collectively. Guys want direction. Guys want to be held accountable. And it's our job as coaches. Sometimes those are hard meetings, but we have to do that. That's part of our job.
Bill Peters joining us. You know, if you go back to April at the start, it was a wild few weeks. You stepped down as Hurricanes head coach. Then you were hired by Calgary. Then you went to Europe for the World Championships. Then you filled out your staff with the Flames. And somehow, some way, you managed to squeeze in a vacation with your wife. All of that in about 5 weeks' time. What was that stretch like, and how did you manage that?
Well, I was busy. I'll tell you what, I lived out of a suitcase for a while there. I grew a little old at the end, and we mixed in buying a house here in Calgary at that time, so that was good. And then we took in the Calgary Stampede for a day or two. So it was a whirlwind of activity, but all worth it. We're settled in now and real happy to be where we are here in Calgary.
What was the Calgary Stampede like?
World class. Great event. Have you ever been?
No, I have not. That's why I'm asking. Tell me.
You got to do it. It's got to be on everybody's bucket list, and you got to do it. You got to make it happen. And a lot of fun, boy. There's a little bit of everything. Great live entertainment, great music, lots of activity going on, and the city's just a buzz.
Calgary is in first in the Pacific Division. They're at home Wednesday night against Philadelphia. Their head coach, Bill Peters, my guest. Bill, great to visit with you. I appreciate that jungle debut. Really nice to have you on the show. I hope we can do it again.
I'd love to. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Great to have you, Bill. Thanks so much. Bill Peters, he's doing a great job there. No nonsense. I love that approach. Mike Babcock disciple, I would expect no less. I have not been. I love to ta hockey. I have never been to the Calgary Stampede. But I know people who have. That's not the first person I've spoken to about that. It's supposed to be an absolute blast. All right, so we head into hour number three. That was a great hour. Bob Myers, Golden State Warriors GM. What an amazing conversation that was. I've had so many conversations with him over the years, and that's one of my favorites, if not my favorite. You know, you need to put him on a podcast because he is so thoughtful and really profound that he needs that kind of real estate. And then you double back and you talk some hockey, Alvin, which pumps me up. Calgary in the jungle. They're in first place in the Pacific. And again, at home Wednesday night against Philadelphia. So that's a really good hour. We look ahead to hour number three. I will reset and open things up for you. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. I want to get into the Patriots once again. I mean, I have so many questions about that game, how that game ended, what they were thinking, what they were doing. The Bears maul the Rams. What does that mean in terms of the pecking order in the NFC? We will talk about that. Pat Mahomes, I've got thoughts on, which I've not gotten to. John Gruden, even when he wins, he loses.
You have to ask Reggie.
Reggie got fired today, reportedly. According to Ian Rappaport, he was told, if you want, you can stay through the end of the year, and they do not expect him to. The Browns. The Cleveland Browns are still America's team. Cleveland, Ohio is fast becoming America's city. That was for you. All of that still ahead, and your telephone calls. You know where to find me. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome, hour number three, straight ahead.